If you'll open your Bibles to Luke 13, that's where we'll begin, in Luke 13. In Luke 13, verse 22, Luke gives us this detail. Verse 22, he was passing through from one city and village to another, teaching and proceeding on his way to Jerusalem. If you drop down to verse 33, Jesus says this about Jerusalem. Verse 33, nevertheless, I must journey on today and tomorrow and the next day, for it cannot be that a prophet would perish outside of Jerusalem. The movie The Green Mile, which I cannot recommend without filters, was about a group of guards watching over inmates on death row. These men were sentenced to the electric chair for their crimes. And on the night of their death, they would be escorted by a guard from their cell to the chair, something they called walking the mile. The floor was painted green, and so they called that final walk the Green Mile. Distance-wise, it wasn't really that long of a walk, but from the perspective of the man putting one foot in front of the other, knowing that each step he takes is one step closer to his death, it would have felt like a mile. In these verses, when Luke gives us this detail about Jesus proceeding on his way to Jerusalem, he's trying to show us that Jesus is walking the mile. Jesus knows exactly what's waiting for him in Jerusalem, something far worse than an electric chair. And yet every step he takes toward Jerusalem is one step closer to his death. But instead of cowering and going the opposite direction, and notice Jesus isn't under guard, he's not being pulled there against his will. Instead of going in the opposite direction, Jesus uses the Green Mile as an opportunity to teach people what 100% commitment to God looks like. And that if we want to follow Jesus, we have to commit to walking the mile for God too. And so in Luke 14, verse 25, while he's on this journey to Jerusalem, he stops in verse 25, down through verse 33. It says, now large crowds were going along with him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who observe it begin to ridicule him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, when he sets out to meet another king in battle, will not first sit down and consider whether he's strong enough with 10,000 men to encounter one coming against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. So then, none of you can be my disciple who does not give up all his own possessions. This is undoubtedly one of the most challenging things Jesus ever said. Yet the timing of when he said it is both touching and inspiring, because he says this while he's walking the mile for God. As hard as Jesus' teachings were, he never asks us to do anything that he wasn't first willing to do himself. He's not like, you know, a coach in sports who just blows the whistle and makes his team run laps while he sits in the shade drinking lemonade. He's not like a parent who gets caught by their kids being hypocritical and then the parent says, well, you know, do as I say, not as I do. That's not Jesus. Jesus says, do as I say, and I'll show you how it's done. Jesus demands that we count the cost. of giving full 100% commitment to him, but he counted the cost of that kind of commitment first. Before he ever left heaven, he counted the cost in five ways according to this text, but we'll just talk about two ways before the Lord's Supper this morning, and we'll save the rest for Bible class. First of all, Jesus counted the cost of hating his earthly parents. Verse 26 really bothers people when we read it today, and I totally understand why. The word hate to us means intense, passionate disdain for a person. So it seems really odd for Jesus to teach us to hate our parents, especially because in other verses he tells us to honor our mother and our father and to love everyone, right? Love God and love our neighbor. But the Bible often uses the word hate as a word of comparison between two things that people love. So if somebody loves something with all of their heart, soul, mind, and strength over here, but they love something else less than that, the Bible calls that hatred in some contexts. So for instance, in Genesis, we learn that Jacob loved Rachel but hated Leah. Well, it's not that he just despised Leah and every time he saw her, he yelled and screamed and, you know, chased her out of the room with a broom or something like that. No, she bore him six kids. It's just that because he loved Rachel so deeply and so strongly, it was as if he hated Leah by comparison. The New American Standard translators, they try to make this clearer because it says that she's the hated one in several different verses. And every time it says that, the New American Standard translates that she's the unloved one. It's just a little softer to our English ears, makes it a little clearer. In another example, God himself says in Malachi 1, and Paul quotes it in Romans 9, Jacob I have loved, but Esau I have hated. Well, it's not that God couldn't stand the sight of Esau and just held him in contempt for his very existence. It's that compared to the way God blessed Jacob, the Israelites, with the law of Moses and all of the glorious covenant promises and his presence with them, it was as if he hated Esau in comparison. So yes, we still love our earthly parents. But Jesus is saying, compared to how much we love God, our love and commitment for our earthly parents is like hatred in comparison. So when we have to choose between serving God and pleasing our parents, if those two things happen to be opposite in the moment, we choose God. And that is a high cost to pay, because no one wants to disappoint their parents. No one wants their parents to feel like they're second place in their heart. And certainly no one wants their parents to be their enemies. But this is the level of commitment Jesus is calling for, and Jesus counted this cost first. Look in Luke chapter 2 for an example of this in Jesus' life. Luke 2. When Jesus was 12 years old, he was faced with a choice about whether to do what Mary and Joseph wanted him to do or to do what God wanted him to do. And he chose God. And instead of leaving Jerusalem with his parents, he stayed behind in the temple area. And so in verse 48 of Luke 2, verse 48, when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us this way? Behold, your father and I have been anxiously looking for you." And he said to them, "Why is it that you were looking for me? Did you not know that I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand the statement which he had made to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth, and he continued in subjection to them. And his mother treasured all these things in her heart. Imagine how piercing this question would have been from Jesus' mother. Why have you treated us this way? How many non-Christian parents have asked their Christian children this question when instead of spending Sunday at the beach with their family, they chose to go worship with their brethren? How many parents from false religions ask this question to their grown-up child who grows up to find the truth? Why have you treated us this way? That's such an emotionally charged question coming from your parents. So hard to stand up to your parents, or to live in a household where your parents think that your service to God is a threat to them. It can get so bad. In Matthew 10, Jesus says it's like a sword, and he's actually come to divide parents against their children in some cases. But Jesus counted the cost. He stood up to his parents, and he explained that God comes first. He was still respectful. It says he went with them, and he was still in subjection to them in every way that he could be. But he made it clear to them that if he has to choose between pleasing them and pleasing God, God is going to get first priority. You're still in the same chapter. Look in verse 33. Simeon has actually been prophesying about Jesus' greatness to Joseph and Mary. And here's the response in verse 33. His father and mother were amazed at the things which were being said about him. And Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, "Behold, this child is appointed for the fall and rise of many in Israel and for a sign to be opposed, and a sword will pierce even your own soul, to the end that the thoughts from many hearts may be revealed." Because of Jesus, many would fall. Many evil men would be crushed by his work and by his word. But they would also have the hope to rise again. The catch is, Jesus' ministry would cause his parents great pain, Simeon says, like a sword piercing their own souls. I think about parents of soldiers who have to watch their child go off to war, to be shot at, to be constantly in danger of death. Jesus was going off to spiritual war. He would be hated. He would be mocked, constantly in danger, and ultimately his whole life was dedicated to walking the green mile for God. What pain that must have caused his parents. And I wonder how many times they tried to talk him out of living that kind of life for God. And Jesus knew the pain it caused his parents. He loved his parents. He didn't want to cause pain to his parents. He didn't want his own mother to have to watch him hanging on a cross for 6 hours. And many times his parents may have wondered, why is he treating us this way? But Jesus counted the cost of all that pain. And because he loved God so much, it was as if he hated his earthly parents by comparison. Secondly, this morning, Jesus counted the cost of hating his own life. In verse 26, Jesus tells us to hate our own life too. Now, the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 5 said, no one ever hated his own body. The point is, we all naturally act in the interest of self-preservation. We want to preserve our bodies because hurting our bodies causes pain and killing our bodies causes death. So we naturally do the things that avoid pain and death in our lives. But compared to Jesus' love for God, it was as if he hated his own body in the sense that it didn't really matter to him what happened to his body as a consequence of his service to God. And so in that passage we read a couple weeks ago from about deacons in Mark 10:45, Jesus said, even the Son of Man did not come to be deaconed, but to deacon and to give his life a ransom for many. We naturally try to prolong our lives as long as possible. Jesus died when he was 33. We naturally try to travel the world and soak in all the sights and fun experiences this life has to offer. Jesus stayed in Palestine. We naturally want comfort and we want a steady paycheck and we want a nice house. And Jesus lived a nomadic lifestyle. Didn't really have a home, living off of basically the voluntary contributions from people supportive of his cause, out of which those voluntary contributions, there was a percentage being stolen every time by Judas. We naturally want a quiet retirement and a peaceful death surrounded by loved ones. Jesus walked the green mile and was executed surrounded by people who hated him. And in verse 27, he tells us that we need to be willing to carry our cross too. That's a challenging thing to say. But before Jesus ever left heaven, he counted the cost of hating his earthly parents and hating his own life and carrying his cross first. And here's the most amazing thing. After counting that cost, he was still willing to pay it. And the reason that's so amazing is because we only ever pay the cost for something when we deem that it's worth the cost. In the retail world, if you refuse to buy something because it's too expensive, what you're saying is, this item is not worth the cost. And sometimes we say that when it costs 20 bucks. But what if it costs your life? The fact that Jesus counted the cost and was still willing to pay it means he deemed us worth the cost. He was willing to walk that green mile for God, not for his own crimes, but for ours. And so, don't miss this point. When he asks us to count the cost of following him, what he's really asking is for us to deem him worth the cost too. And he is, because he counted the cost first.